Mackay to the wing position on the member stand side. Oh, Jasolenko, you beauty!
Here's Mackay v. Diva. A nation roars for a hero. She's starting to wind up.
That's the best of the lot.
This is a famous victory. A magnificent performance.
Held in a world record. Ian Thorpe.
Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us. He's yeah!
Australia have got it!
The champion becomes a legend.
100% reason to remember the name.
For Tata Motors, Australia's best value dual cab 4x4 ute.
Oh, what a day to have him in after the weekend that we had. He's just about been a part of all these through his career. Golden Duck for Scots College in the first 11 in Sydney. Golden Duck at the MCG, bowled by Eddie Maguire. No ability, speed, size or courage in rugby, but one of the great voices. Who needs to have the talent on the field when you can paint the story with your words off it? The great Drew Morford joins us this afternoon in JYP. G'day, Drew.
G'day, Half. Thanks very much for having me on.
It's a pleasure. I said to you before, and I'll say it again for the listeners, that there's a list on my wall up in the office of people I want to get in to talk to, but due to other contractual situations and agreements, we don't get access to them. Yeah. Now, there's been a recent change in your situation, and I am pumped about that, not because of what's happened to you, but we get a chance to talk about your great career.
Well, yeah, I finished with the ABC at the end of the Sydney Test match on January the 10th, but I signed my life away last Friday.
Did you?
Yep. All that's done.
All done.
And free man.
And we get hold of you. Fantastic. So, on the Monday. Very next working day, he's back.
Given the ABC and their penchant for bureaucracy, signing Lifeway would have taken about 5 hours, wouldn't it?
There was a bit of to-ing and fro-ing over a good few weeks, but the eventual signing, you know, was stress-free by the end, I suppose.
Fair old payout for you.
Not massive, because the payout is largely based on what you'd been earning.
Right, yes, the old situation. You know all that sort of stuff, right?
What about not getting a quid? Working here in the Age, I know a lot about that.
Well, yes, welcome to our world. Just on, before we go too deep into your career at this stage, the weekend we just had, Drew, I mean, you being a man who's called just about every sport in the history of the world, you would have just been sitting back on your chair, watching the TV, listening to the radio, going, how good is this?
I lapped it up. I watched the Socceroos. I watched a little bit of Serena, but it was easy for me to leave the tennis and go back to the football because it was absolutely phenomenal. I watched Cadell Evans yesterday.
Yeah.
I watched Novak last night. I watched the big show from Perth yesterday afternoon. So, it's been a smorgasbord, really.
Yeah, it's a great sporting weekend. We've talked a lot about that through the afternoon. But where did your interest in sport come from? Was it always something you had as a kid? Did you love sport?
I did. Look, I can remember when I was a kid, about 8 years old, and I wanted to be a sports commentator, and I used to push marbles around the floor and hold a glass and hear my voice back through the glass. So I was calling these games that I was making up on the lounge room floor all the time.
With marbles.
Yeah. And then we had a wall. I bowl left-handed and bat right-handed, so I was able to chuck a tennis ball against the wall and hit it, and I used to do it for hour on hour on hour, and it drove my mother mad. Ba-bang, 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 ba-bang. And the whole time I was Freddie Truman, short outside the off stump, cut by O'Neill, four, you know, hooked and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so I was talking the whole time.
So when did you graduate from sort of made-up events to actually trying your hand at calling real events? You know, we hear a lot about, I remember Rex Hunt talking about going sitting in the stands at Waverley during the Escort Cup or something. What was the equivalent of that for you?
Well, actually, it was when I got a traineeship with the ABC. They used to take on trainees in sport, rural, music and so on. Mm. And I got a trainee's job with the ABC when I was 18. And so I used to sit at the back of the Noble stand at the SCG, and Alan McGilvray would say, do that, don't say those things, and, you know, just point me in the right direction. So I'd be talking into a tape recorder and get Mac to hear it back, so you couldn't learn it from a better bloke, could you?
Well, that's unbelievable. When you think about the impact he's had on the broadcast in sports broadcasting in Australia, to have him as the one checking your tapes and your mentor, I mean, that's a huge opportunity, isn't it?
Oh, it was absolutely terrific. The first day I started work, I walked into the office, and in one little office to the right-hand side was Alan McGilvray and Jeff Marnie, legendary race caller, and in the office straight ahead with a view over William Street was Norman May. Yeah. And he spent his whole time looking out the window. But he's a bloke who called 45 sports or something like that.
Yeah.
And you could just learn from blokes like that. I must say that most of what I learned was in the pub after hours.
Well, it's not such a bad thing either.
Yeah.
What are some of the sort of broadcasting basics that they passed on to you? What are the, like the first things you need to learn if you're aspiring to that career?
Yeah, okay. Talk in the present tense.
Yeah.
So that the crowd's reaction will catch you out if you're talking behind the action. So the bloke didn't, it wasn't a case of Jezelenko took the mark, Jezelenko takes the mark.
Yep.
And so everything's in the present tense, so you're right on top of it.
Yeah. Nice.
So that was one of them. And, you know, don't overburden things with words.
Yeah.
Word economy.
It doesn't have to be wall-to-wall words, because parts of a broadcast are crowd effects, silence, and commentary. And one of the best is silence.
Silence, yeah.
If you say, Lily at the top of his mark, Cowdery shaking in his boots, about to face him, if you shut up for 3 or 4 seconds, the listener goes, oh, I can't wait to see what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
So silence is a great element to broadcast.
I was going to ask you that very same question because, I've listened to a lot of sports commentary now, more than 40 years worth, and the one thing I think has changed the most is there doesn't seem to be the same economy of words now. Everyone's trying to fill the gaps all the time rather than, you know, let someone paint a picture in their head or let the crowd noise tell the story.
Yeah, because especially on radio, people are painting their own picture. Mm. You can steer them in the right directions to say that, you know, bloke, you're 96 and another boundary to bring up his third century for the series, that sort of thing. But if you can, you know, paint the picture that the bowler is, you know, on his knees, the batting's right on top, and you won't want to go and make a cup of tea now because this boundary's going to come next ball,
yep,
then shut up and let it happen. it's part of the deal.
Yeah. So what about, you're talking a lot of cricket here at the moment, and we've just come off a great summer and looking forward to the World Cup as well, and we can't wait for that. But was that always the sport du jour for you in Sydney? Or was it rugby league or union, or what was your, go-to?
I was a rugby league fan.
Yeah.
I went to a school that played rugby union. I followed rugby union and rugby league, but St George rugby league team, that was my team.
Right.
It wasn't because they were winners. I happened to
live. They win 11 in a row.
11 in a row. From the time I went from 8 to 18, inclusive.
Right?
So all through my teenage years, my team was winning every time.
Wow.
And they just happened to be the team that was based in my district. So that was the team everybody in my part of the world supported.
So would you go?
Oh, absolutely. Out of the 11 premierships, I reckon I might have missed the first two. But you know, I was there. I can remember catching the train from Cronulla and getting to the Sydney Cricket Ground at 9 o'clock in the morning to reserve the seats for the family, and they'd drive in later on. So I'd be there for 4 hours, sitting there on my own, making sure there are rugs and cushions and, you know, there's room for four people to join. I was absolutely mad on them. And my hero was Reg Gasnier, who, in AFL terms, was Malcolm Blight, Ron Barassi, you know, Lee Matthews all rolled into one.
Yeah.
He was Billy Slater. He's probably, Gaz was probably a bit of a forerunner to Billy Slater. He had pace, he had a change of pace and all that. He was an absolute hero.
Yep.
He used to call him Puff the Magic Dragon.
That's right.
And Gaz, he lived in Toolumbi Street, which was about 400 yards from where I lived. And I used to be able to work out what time he went to the ground. And I'd make sure I was out in the front yard, kicking the footy up and down the air, you know, and grabbing it myself so that Gasnier would see me on his way to the game.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Didn't offer to carry his bags. I thought you were supposed to do that. I want to hear that he had a Gladstone bag. And no, maybe it wasn't that long ago.
Oh, maybe they had property stewards even in those days. I'm not sure.
Is it true that they actually changed the rugby league rules to counter St George? Didn't they bring
they
in
did.
The tackle count?
Six tackle rule
to
beat St George.
And was that directly as a result of their dominance?
Yep, it was.
Yeah, okay.
Because they used to hang on to the ball for a long time, or at other times make sure the opposition had the ball, so they'd tackle them and tackle to hurt.
Yeah.
So if the opposition had the ball for 30 of the first 40 minutes in the first half and they just crunched them into the ground,
it'd
be 4-0 at half time, and when they were tired they'd give it to Gasnier and away you'd go, thank you very much. So you know, you could hold on to the ball for a long period of time, so they did bring the six tackle rule in to beat them, and they did pretty well.
So when you're sitting there watching Reg Gasnier and the great St George teams of that era win flag after flag after flag, were there dreams of you one day sporting the big red V?
I did sport the big red V once because my father organised for me to get Reg Gasnier's jumper. And I'm this little kid and Gaz's jumper was 18 sizes too big, but I got the great big red red V with the St George logo and the number on the back, and it was the proudest thing I ever got, apart from Norm O'Neill's cricket gloves. My hero in the summer was Norm O'Neill, who also played for St George. And my hero in the winter, Reg Gasnier. So,
happy days for young Drew Morford.
Yeah, so I got the batting gloves and Reg Gasnier's jumper.
Well, that was the start of greatness, and thankfully it moved into the commentary box after that for Drew Morford. 3:19, he is our special guest on JYB this afternoon. The first edition for 2015. Rowan Connolly is helping us get through the hour as well. I don't think we'll need much help. He's not bad at this caper, Drew. I reckon we'll get through, but Rowan's here to ride shotgun for the rest of the hour. We'll all be back after this on halftime.
Right on the boundary line, shooter. Oh!
Premiers will have a job to snatch this game.
Who's on Kuda?
He's not happy about the distance. He's looking for some options. He's looking for something other than to kick for goal. Might have no choice. It starts right. It swings back. What a goal! Oh, you'd want to be on the Blues now. Oh, just like the walk that Lee Matthews did way back in 1990 for Collingwood. And he punched the air. And Mark Williams, he's taken the time.
Ship. 3:25, some iconic moments of the broadcasting career of Drew Morford. OAM, by the way. I missed the OAM before when I introduced our very special guest for JYB. The 94 prelim, the Kangas and the Cats. 2 seconds on the clock.
Oh, Mick Martin dominated Gazza that day.
Yeah, he did too, didn't he?
I've got to ask you, Drew. That is, I always say, that is the greatest game of football I've ever seen. Where does that game rank for you?
Yeah, it was fantastic. One of my favourites was the draw between Collingwood and Essendon, the first Anzac Day.
Yeah, yep, 95.
That was, you know, there were 95,000 there, about the third biggest home and away crowd. A draw, unbelievable. That was a beauty.
When you came down to Melbourne, so you're a traineeship in Sydney at the ABC.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did you come to Melbourne? What happened there?
Went to Perth first.
Oh, Perth first.
Went to Perth when I was 20. And that's when I caught up with Aussie Rules.
Yep.
And you know, started from scratch, broadcast about 3 seasons of Waffle over there, made every mistake known to mankind.
Not a bad place to make it, though.
Fortunately, the West Australians probably thought, who's this mug? But, you know, it wasn't heard in the rest of Australia. But yeah. So I came over to Melbourne to join a documentary program. And after a while, I thought, what am I doing? You know, film stories on canoeing and gliding and stuff like that. I really want to get back into sports commentary. And a vacancy came up in 77. Got the job and started round 177.
Yeah. So when you're in Perth, like, you haven't seen a lot of Australian rules football. How much had you seen before you did your first call?
Well, none, basically, when I got off the plane.
So were you calling hookers and props and front rowers? And
I think I slipped into, you know, over the halfway line and into touch once or twice. But it was a complete mystery to me. So I sat with Ern Henfrey, who was our around-the-grounds bloke in Perth, who incidentally was admitted to the AFL Hall of Fame posthumously last season, last year. Terrific bloke. And he'd sit in the back of the grandstand and do about 3 reports a quarter, and I was encouraged to ask him questions about the game in between each report. So I was able to sort of sit and watch and learn a bit. And eventually I shared the microphone with George Grigicic, and in an average half, in an average quarter of football, say 30 minutes, he'd do 25 and I'd do 5. Couldn't wait to get the mic back.
Was 20 of his 25 minutes bagging the umpires? Because he was big on that.
Yeah, and barracking for South Fremantle.
Yeah, right.
Well, good. In a place like that, I suppose you can do that and get away with it, Drew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did everything.
So who was your first game in 77 when you came here? Remember your first game?
I should remember. I reckon it was probably North Melbourne. And it might have even been North and Collingwood who finished up playing in the grand final.
Okay. Mm.
People would ring up and say, you idiot, they didn't play till round 18. But I actually can't remember the exact game, which was my first. Well, I should, because it was on Easter Saturday. And I can remember spending all of Good Friday, instead of drinking Wobbler and falling about, actually learning all the numbers and, you know, actually packing my dacks, thinking, gee, I'm about to call my first VFL game.
What your other big early claim to fame, I reckon, was hosting the Winners, which it's amazing this long after the event how many people still talk about how much they love that show, The Winners. And I'm one of them. It always strikes me as one of the great ironies of modern football coverage, that we've got 9 games a week, absolute saturation coverage, but there is actually no program that wraps up the round in a highlight sense with a mark of the day, goal of the day, and highlights from all the games. Yeah. And that's what the winners did absolutely perfectly. Plus, we got to see your sort of mini afro and the wing-keel collar.
Well, the wing-keel collar was popular. That was the remember time. The shirts that Barras wore in the 77 What's grand
that,
final?
Ben Wexon drew inspiration from for America shirt. Too, from that shirt.
Australia
Wish
too,
I'd got a quid for it. the winners still is fondly remembered. I remember, especially in Perth and South Australia, because people over there got their staple diet of VFL as it was then, football in Melbourne, off the winners. Because Peter Landy and Lou Richards didn't sort of cross the border as much as the AFL program did. So the winners went back-to-back with Countdown. So Drew and Molly were this famous duo.
Good lead-in.
In Perth, they just loved the winners and all the West Aussies who were playing over here at the time.
Yeah.
They still remember it fondly. A few years ago, I was at a test match at the Wacker, and lunch was on the opposite side of the ground from where we were commentating. So after lunch, I had to walk around the boundary line to get back to the commentary box. And some idiot on the hill said, "Hey, there's Drew from the winners." And he started, and da 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 da.
It's a great song.
Great theme music.
And it became 200, 300, 400 people chanting the theme of the winners.
Fantastic. Actually,
in fact, half
the time. Almost like the Richies at the cricket the other day.
Half and I recently decided to do a segment on great sporting themes. Or maybe it was Finey and I, but the winners cracked top 5. It was definitely...
I heard that. I was chuffed, yeah.
People's favourite. And look, I'd say the other thing that people probably knew you for later on, maybe... mid to late 80s into the 90s, was you hosting the Saturday Night Replay and those very memorable crosses to Scotty Palmer in the offices of the Sunday Press. In fact, can you just indulge me? Can we recreate one now? I'd like you to, pretend I'm Scotty and just, you're throwing to a break, but now we cross the offices, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, okay. So they were the highlights of round 18 of, was it AFL then? VFL football. And now, to bring us up to date with all the latest news on what's going on behind the scenes, here's Scott Palmer from the offices of the Sunday Herald Sun. Scotty.
Terrific, Drew.
That was always
it didn't matter what Drew asked Scotty.
Terrific, Drew.
And Scotty, can you bring us up to date on Luke Hodges' hamstring? Terrific, Drew. love Scotty. We know he's a regular listener too.
Really bad news. Corey McKernan's broken his leg.
Terrific, Drew. Actually, saw Corey McKernan today and he said he felt like he had a broken leg. No, the winners was a great service to the football viewer, as you say. But, you guys seem to have a lot of fun, even into those days when you were with Seven, into the early 90s. There was always a sense of fun about it, I reckon. I just reckon sometimes now it all gets a bit po-faced and overly serious,
Yeah, I suppose television rundowns are cram full of what you got to do and which segment to throw to, but it was a bit looser in those days, I reckon. And I have had fun over a long period of time, there's no doubt about it. And the winners... It only showed 2 or maybe 3 games a week. So if you were no good at the time, you never got on television.
Yeah.
Nowadays, 18 teams all get on television, even if they're getting belted by 150, they get a run in full from start to finish. But in those days, Fitzroy were a good team, in the days of Bernie Quinlan and Gary Wilson and stuff like that, they'd get a run. But St Kilda's and stuff like that, they didn't get on
Never
TV.
Get
on.
No,
well, they were the ones that you saw on World of Sport the next day with the one camera slow-mo and the faked crowd noise in the background. It was a handball loops over the top.
I actually had to call post-event Brett Allison's mark.
Yes.
Oh,
it was
just,
it was a one camera and it was wide shot and he just went straight up in the air and took this fantastic mark, candidate for Mark of the Year, and I had to go in on the following Tuesday or something and Allison!
Now, you also, Little Bird tells me that, there was a Friday night ABC show and you worked with the likes of Ron Barassi and Teddy, the great late, great Teddy EJ Whitten.
Well,
it was a bit problematic at times.
Well, we had the first The Footy Show long before Sam and Eddie ever came along.
Is that what it was called?
The Footy Show. And we recorded it on Friday afternoon. And we used to go to a pizza joint up the road from the ABC studio in Elstonwick and have a pizza and a few reds and all that sort of stuff just to loosen up and record it at about 3:15 in the afternoon. And it went to air about 9:15 at night. Well, this year, when the lights first went on at the MCG, North played Collingwood.
Oh, yeah, 1985.
See,
I was there.
I couldn't remember the year to save
myself. They busted the gates down, remember?
They did, because they didn't have enough people on the gates. So we thought, well, we can't record this program during the afternoon and have it go to air at 9:15 at night when there's a live game on at the MCG. So we better have somebody at the MCG to bring us up to date with what the halftime score is and stuff like that. So we'll do the footy show live for the first ever time.
Makes sense.
Now, Barass was a regular panellist, and Lee Matthews was a regular and so on. The guest that I organised for that night was Ted Whitten. And I said, no, we're going to do the show live, so you need to be at this restaurant in Glen Huntley Road at about, say, 8 o'clock. He said, oh, that's perfect. He said, that's great, because I had a function to do at Geelong Footy Club. I'll be able to get out of it. And he said, I'll be there. Well, we're at the restaurant. 8 o'clock comes, 8:15, 8:20, no EJ. And eventually, he burst the front doors open, knocked over every chair in the joint. Oh, he was full. So I said to the executive producer, Robbie Weeks, you tell him he's too pissed to go on. I'm not telling him. Anyway, we whacked a few black coffees into him. We went over to the studio and we did it live. So I'm the host, and on one side of me, I've got Barass, and on the other side, I've got EJ.
Oh, dear.
And, of course, they had this long-running battle. I'm Mr. Football, you're Mrs. Football. And EJ's leaning across me, throwing the elbow at Barass, and I'm ducking backwards thinking I could get the depressed fracture of the cheekbone live on television here. It was massive. I've never seen it back. In fact, I'm not even sure whether they ran a tape over it, whether it's gone to God.
Good footage.
But it was just unbelievable. Barass and EJ.
Some of the great characters across your journey. I want to find out a few more of those too after the break if we can, Drew. Drew Morford is our special guest. You can follow him on Twitter too, at Drew Morford. Pretty straightforward these days. He is one of the legends of Australian sports broadcasting. We are wrapped to have him in the JYB chair with Rowan Connolly today. 19-4, Rowan Connolly is with us for JYB this afternoon. Our special guest and the all-time great of Australian sports broadcasting, Drew Morford, OAM, if you don't mind, is in the chair this afternoon. We're talking about characters, EJ and Barass, before the break, Drew. Who are the other great characters you've come across or worked with through the journey, in footy particularly this day? We'll talk cricket in a sec.
Well, I did a game, which was a pre-season game up in Cairns when I was with Channel 7, and we were debuting Paul Ruse and Tony Lockett.
Right.
When they were both Sydney types. And I had to take up the Channel 7 blazer and shirts and ties and everything, the whole uniform. So excess baggage me, flying up from Melbourne, they're flying up from Sydney. And I got the gear to them, 3 hours before the game. And they were going off to ostensibly go for a run or whatever, I don't know. So I've ironed my shirt.
Plugger, go for a run.
Well, I don't know.
You fell for that one, Drew.
I know he didn't iron the shirt. So I've ironed the shirt and everything. So I turned, right, we'll leave at 6 o'clock and away we go. So they turn up looking like they've slept in the gear. Anyway, we do the game, and I couldn't believe Plugger, it was he was breathing like this the whole time. Honestly, he was on the puffer.
Yeah.
And here's a bloke who was an absolute legend of the game. Look, he sounded as though he couldn't have run from the goal square to the centre circle. Bear dinkum.
Wow.
And the next morning, Rocket Ead was coaching the Swans at the time, and I saw him at the checkout, and he said, how'd the big fella go? And I said, I couldn't believe he's breathing. He said, oh, yeah, he's been on the puffer for yonks. And I said, the other thing about him is I couldn't believe he didn't know the players. And he said, tell me about it. He didn't know his own players. He reckons he was only interested in two or three fullbacks. The others, he just beat them out of hand without even worrying about it.
Well, he would.
There was a Silvani, and I forget who else he might have known.
Might have been a Langford, perhaps, at the time?
Maybe, somebody like that. But the rest of me couldn't care less.
And who does that remind you of? Another great full forward with a sort of lack of knowledge.
Gary Senior.
Unbelievable. Mm. There's a million stories about Gary Ablett saying exactly the same thing. Yep. Playing in a state game in Adelaide, and I think Gary Lyon making his Victorian debut, and they're doing lane work, and Gaz is waiting for Gary Lyon to give him the pass, turns to the bloke behind him and goes, who's this guy? Playing for Victoria.
Yeah. Well, Plugger has apparently said to Rocket one day at training, he says, who's that little blonde bloke who keeps drilling the ball down my chest, lace out? Stuart Maxfield. Was feeding him on a plate, didn't even know his name. It was his teammate.
That's a concern. That's a genuine concern. Not paying a lot of attention to those meetings, Plugger apparently drew. What about cricket? We can move on. We've got so much to talk about, and we're going to run out of time again, right? We always do this. You love footy, and you called it magnificently. You're a part of our winter, but how much did you look forward to summer and the summer of cricket?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you are, as a lot of SMSs are coming in at the moment, that you the ABC, the coverage of the cricket from eons, is just, that's what summer is. You turn on the cricket, there's Drew Morfitt.
Yeah. As soon as you hear the cricket on the radio, you know, the summer's here and cricket's on the radio. But I did 10 years of cricket on TV when the ABC TV shared the rights with Channel 9 because 9's transmitters didn't get to the whole of Australia, and Cricket Australia, or Australian Cricket Board as they were at the time, worked out that, geez, a lot of our cricketers come from Dungog and, you know, out of the way places. So if kids in the country aren't seeing cricket, we're going to lose them to other sports. So they actually subsidised the ABC's coverage, which we went to places like Groote Eylandt and Broome and Christ knows what else that Channel 9 didn't get to. So for 10 years I did all the test matches in Australia with Norman May and Keith Miller and Bob Simpson. So it was great.
Good names.
So, just on that, I've just got to ask this, because prior to World Series cricket, I know the ABC had to scrimp on costs a little bit, but you only got the one camera coverage. So you're looking at the wicketkeeper's ass every second over. Did that change after Nine got the rights? Did you guys actually go the extra camera?
Well, I can tell you exactly who changed it. I used to work with a bloke named David Hill when I was working on that Sports Night program, the documentary program. And he worked there for about 18 months, and then he left and went to Channel 9. And he was the bloke who decided that I'm sick of watching the wicketkeeper's ass, that we're going to televise cricket from both ends. And he didn't know anything about cricket, but he maybe knew a bit about TV. And I said, well, you can't do that, because the viewer wants to know that Lily's downwind, Alderman's into the wind, the breeze is coming from here, Alderman will be swinging away from the right-hander or whatever. He said, oh, I couldn't give a stuff. He said, you just don't want to be watching the game through the wicketkeeper. So we're going to televise it from both ends. So I disagreed with him at the time. And guess who was right and who was wrong? He's made a squillion. He's now, you know, working for Fox in America and his, you know, gated village in Los Angeles. And he earns about $5 million a minute.
Well, we thank him for that.
Particularly when it was Rod Marsh too. I mean, there's a fair bit of ass to see past there, wasn't it?
Yeah. He has now actually moved on from doing sport for Fox. And he's doing American Idol.
Is he really?
As executive producer of American Idol. So, you know, he knows Keith Urban and all those types.
Now, I know we've got to get to a break, but good SMS too. People wanting to know your strangest commentary moments. Now, I'm thinking of the Lights Out game at Waverley. I can't remember if you were involved with that or not, but what's the weirdest thing you've had to commentate?
Okay, well, I didn't do the Lights Out game. I don't have to go back very far. Round one last season, when the Giants beat the Swans.
Oh, yeah, the Swans.
And
the thunderstorm.
The thunderstorm and the lightning. And the lightning hit the grandstand right above our heads. And I was talking at the time. And how I didn't drop the magic, to this day, I have no idea. Because it shook the whole place, honestly. And I'm with Ty Kennelly. And we went, whoa, hey, I think Jesus might have got a mention, but something like that.
What about near Easter? That's right.
They had about half an hour for quarter time. They huddled the players away in the rooms, and it was just too dangerous to be playing footy. So that was a bit odd. So we had to paddle for about half an hour through this electrical storm before the players came back.
And the Giants won.
And the Giants and the Swans, which would, in a two-horse race, that'd have been 100-1.
Yeah.
And there was Buddy Franklin playing his first game for Sydney and all that. Hardly got a touch.
Yeah, first couple of weeks for the Swans were no good last year, but it turned out okay. Not perfect, but okay. 12-4, Drew Morfitt, OAM, is our special guest in the JYB chair this afternoon. Rowan Connolly as well. Back shortly. 8-4. Drew Morfitt is our special guest in the JYB chair this afternoon. Rowan Connolly as well. Marco and the Ox coming up after 4 o'clock. Don't forget them. I want to talk Olympics and horse racing in a second, but before I do, Drew, your favourite cricket memory as a broadcaster, what is it?
Pretty hard to beat when we beat the Poms 5-0.
Yeah.
Last summer.
Really?
Yeah.
It was Kerry O'Keefe's last day in the broadcast box for the ABC, and I was on air with him. We had a camera in the box to record the fact that the great Kerry was leaving and all that stuff. And when Ryan Harris took the last wicket, Kerry stood up and he said, "Stand up. If you're 5-0 up, stand up. If you're 5-0 up." So I stood up with him. We're arm in arm. And, you know, the camera's got it all and whatever. So, you know, beat the Poms in an Ashes series 5-0. Because we have gone through some hard times with them.
Did the commentary get a little jingoistic as our fortunes were rising during the summer?
Well, we figure that with the national team, you're entitled to actually
barrack a bit.
Just do a little bit of barracking. Just rein it in, but, you know, bad luck about the Poms who live in Australia who are barracking for England. If you're listening to the radio in Australia, you might have to cop a bit. It was a bit like the Socceroos on Saturday night. You know.
Like Andy Harper. Andy Harper talking about the referee. Yeah. Jeez, he didn't hold back.
You're entitled to have a bit of support for your home team, I think. What about the Olympics? I know you're a great horse racing man, a tragic, and you've got the adjustment farm, but the Olympics, what does that mean to you as a commentator, as a broadcaster?
Well, it's a feather in your cap to be selected. I waited 18 years while I was at the ABC before I got my first games. And Los Angeles, 1984, and I thought, wow, I've made it. I'm finally into an Olympic team, and I'm on the plane with Norman May and, you know, all these blokes, and this is great. We're doing cycling, and we won a gold medal where we beat the Americans on their home soil, and they'd won every gold medal. They cheated like mad. And but we won the men's
Team Pursuit.
With blokes from four different countries. And I'd done a program called Flashing Pedals leading up to it out of the Coburg Velodrome. Yep. So I'd met, you know, a lot of the blokes, and Dean Woods from Wangaratta and all that, won a gold medal when he was 18. So to call a gold medal for Australia at the Olympics is an absolute highlight. And, of course, in London a few years ago, it was just great to see Anna Mears.
Yeah.
I called Anna Mears' gold medal. That was fantastic. Called Cathy Watt in 92. So they are among the highlights.
Australian medals aside, what is the most memorable Olympic moment you've witnessed?
Well, on the same night that Anna Mears won, Sir Chris Hoy won his sixth gold medal for the Brits on the track in London. And bloody hard to win six gold medals at the Olympic Games. And I'd met him the previous year. Earlier the same year, he'd come out for the world titles here in Melbourne. So I'd met him. So I was really pleased to see him get his sixth. And it was one of those situations where with 100 yards to go, he had no hope. He was going to be lucky to get a medal. And he just burst his way through a hole that wasn't there, got up right on the line. It was just spine tingling.
Yes, certainly one of the greats of world sport, isn't he, Chris Hoy? Hoy. What about racing? Who's your favourite racehorse you've seen on track, either track on race day and do great things?
Black Caviar. Because we actually spilled Black Caviar at our place.
You did too, that's right.
She came from the sales, and before she had a name or racing colours or anything like that, she was at our place, and the owners all came out, had photos taken and so on. So, yeah, we were part of the Black Caviar saga before she even raced.
Did she come back after she achieved some great things?
No. Once she proved she was an absolute champion, I think her spelling paddocks probably had fences that were 20 feet high and had lights, sirens and padlocks.
Now, surely you've got a sign on the joint now, Black Caviar stayed here.
I thought about it.
Oh, you
I
should.
I thought about it at the time. Yeah, like as seen on TV.
Home of Greatness. That's what I'd be running with. Home of Greatness.
Bigger than Mr. Ed.
That's what I'd be running with. We need to get to another break, unfortunately. We're going to run out of time. It always happens on JYB. And I think with Drew Rowe, we could probably talk for another 6 or 7 weeks non-stop.
Easily.
To get through most of the stories. But
we will, off air.
Not going to happen today, but we'll be back very shortly after this. Well, the reaction off the SMS, not surprisingly, for our JYB guest, Drew Morfitt, this afternoon, has been nothing short of extraordinary.
Get a life, you people.
What did you make of it, Rowe?
Terrific, Drew!
You idiot. Drew, we do thank you for coming in and being part of our segment. We love it, but having names like you and people like you with such great history and passion for sport is just fantastic. So thanks for coming in and being a part of it.
Yeah, well done,
thanks,
Drew.
Thanks very much.
May there be another innings left in you.
Absolutely. He's not out. He's not out at the moment, Drew Morfitt. He's got plenty more to give, and he's been a wonderful guest to kick off a big season of JYB on Halftime. Thank you, Ro.
Cheers, everyone.
Look forward to your company again soon. And Marco and the Ox are up next after 4 o'clock. A huge show coming up for them. Dave Davutovic and Ange Postecoglou, the Asian Cup winning coach of the Socceroos, will join the boys. Don't miss that. I'll catch you tomorrow from midday. Until then, it's full time on Halftime.